91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. This hour we discuss the death penalty, and particularly those inmates on Florida's death row in Rayford. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. 89 Floridians have been executed since 1979. There have been 25 exonerations from wrongful convictions. That translates to one release per every four executions. Among today's guests is the 23rd exonerated condemned man. He's Herman Lindsay, who spent 3 years on death row. His release followed a unanimous Florida Supreme Court ruling. 60% of U.S. citizens still support the death penalty. 80% favored it 20 years ago. Stay tuned. Topical Currents up next. First the news. And indeed, stay tuned to WLRN for any breaking news on today's events. Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. It is today's Topical Currents. And this hour we discuss the death penalty, and particularly executions carried out in Florida, but not limited to. Since the resumption of capital punishment in 1979, 89 Floridians have been put to death. There have been 25 exonerations from wrongful convictions.
With us is criminal defense and death penalty attorney and analyst Richard Jaffe. He's a board member of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, the senior partner at the law firm of Jaffe and Drennan, PC, and author of Quest for Justice, Defending the Damned. He joins us from Birmingham, Alabama. Welcome to you.
Bonnie, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a former board member of three board terms on NACDL, but I'm still on the Death Penalty Committee, and I'm glad to be here.
Okay, thank you so much.
Welcome to you, Mr. Jaffe. And rounding us out is the Executive Director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. He's Mark Elliott, and he joins us from Tampa. Thanks for taking some time, Mark. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you. And thank you for having this discussion and questions on this important issue of the death penalty in Florida. Thank you.
We also want to say that joining us a little bit later in the program will be former death row inmate Herman Lindsay. He spent 3 years on death row before he was exonerated in 2009. We will also hear his story. So, Richard Jaffe, beginning with you, tell us more about you. You grew up in Birmingham, Alabama during the late 50s and 60s, and how did that time shape your life and your career?
Well, you know, that was the time when you had separate facilities for African-Americans and Caucasians. If a black person looked a white person in the eye, the person could be shot and killed. There was a much abuse in the civil rights arena, and obviously we're close to Selma, we're in Birmingham, we're down the street basically from Montgomery, so civil rights definitely affected my growth as a person and as an attorney, and also my view is that the death penalty is the ultimate civil right because it's the right to live.
Now, you started out as a district attorney, assistant district attorney, assistant attorney general. Why did you switch? When did you become a defense attorney?
Well, and it's interesting, Bonnie, because in 1978, when my first death penalty case came across my desk as a prosecutor, I did not want to participate in prosecuting someone that could end up with the death penalty, regardless of what that person did or didn't do.
Mark Elliott, I'd like to jump ahead just a little bit, and because you're in Florida, tell us more about the Timely Justice Act and where we stand right now as far as appeal processes of death row inmates.
Well, essentially, Florida's now killing more prisoners faster than ever before, where we killed eight imprisoned people in 2014, which was the most in 30 years. So that's been one of the results of this bill, and and just kind of the general policy of our current governor, and that's what's led to this. There's been 20 imprisoned people executed in the first term of our governor, and that is a new record for the first term of any governor in Florida history. So that's the situation today.
Mark, could you tell us, you're the executive director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Could you tell us who you are, who they are, what you're doing?
Yes. I'm a Floridian, and the bulk of the people in the organization are, too. We're a coalition of individuals and organizations united to end the death penalty in Florida.
And which organizations do you comprise?
Oh, goodness. We have quite a few coalition members, and some don't agree on everything, but some don't agree on anything, but they agree that there's a better way forward than the, you know, the unnecessary killing of prisoners. There's a saying that the more you know about the death penalty, the less you'd like it, and that was certainly true for me. When Florida adopted life in prison without the possibility of parole, I couldn't understand why the state was still executing people if they were never going to leave prison, to never be someone that would be a danger to society, would never be released. So I began a journey to find out more about it. And most people that I know, and certainly the majority of people in general, once they find out more about the death penalty program and how it works, they have serious concerns and typically think that it's time for it to end.
Death penalty attorney Richard Jaffe, from a national standpoint, is Florida sort of creeping up on Texas as being the top numbers of executions held each year?
Well, per capita, Florida's ahead of Texas, as is Alabama, not in numbers, but per capita. Hmm. Both Florida and Alabama and one other state have something in common that's it's not used much in Florida, but it's still on the books as far as I know, and that is a jury override, where a judge can actually override a jury's recommendation, which I think is a terrible. I don't think it happens much in Florida because there are standards that haven't happened in a while. But in Alabama, it's common. 22% of the people on death row in Alabama, a judge overrode a jury's decision for life and sentenced them to death. And we, too, as was said, are now executing and moving in the direction of executing more people than ever. When people learn, and I agree with that statement, that the more you know, the less you like it, because when people realize that life without parole means it, that no one in this country that's got life without parole, without the possibility of parole, has ever gotten out on parole. And when people realize it's also five times as expensive, more expensive to prosecute people for the death penalty as opposed to housing them for life without parole, regardless of their age, when they realize these kinds of facts, when they realize that many times lawyers are most of the time, lawyers are underfunded, underpaid, and unprepared. Sleeping attorneys and drinking attorneys have represented people who have been executed and sent to death row. When people learn these things, they begin to question the death penalty, as was just said, and I thought very eloquently.
Richard, I read that you have more exonerations for death row inmates than any other attorney. So I'd like to know a few things about that. First, how did you come to handle these death penalty cases? Was it when you got that first one and left the assistant or the attorney general's office in 1978?
Well, actually, it's in terms of new trials, exonerations, that happens to be true. But places like the Innocence Project in New York, that's where the most of the exonerations mm-hmm. have occurred, you know, from DNA analysis and so forth. But in Alabama, five people that were on death row were later exonerated and four of them at new trials. And I represented three of those people at their new trials, where a jury found them clearly not guilty, and one of those on appeal. So, but I gravitated into that because I was appointed to a death penalty case to someone who was on death row. I didn't want to do it, and the judge basically made me. And it just evolved from there.
How do you get most of your cases? Is that how you get them? You're appointed, or do you find them? Or you hear of somebody? How does that happen?
Well, what happens is the courts start asking you to, or lawyers that become successful, and those judges that want good lawyers start asking those lawyers. Now, and most of them, you're right, are appointed. But that's really only part of my law practice. I couldn't support myself doing death penalty work only. So, you know, I do a lot of white-collar work and a lot of other kinds of work. But the death penalty cases are mostly appointed. Now, the other spectrum is that there are plenty of judges that are in bed with bad lawyers and want to help them out. And so they don't care who they appoint. And they appoint people that really aren't qualified, that are just trying to pay their light bills. And that's not an exaggeration, and many times those cases are the ones that end up on death row and are later reversed. And that's where wrongful convictions occur as a result of that.
Is that...
But to answer your question, to answer your question, if you're facing death, the chances of you having enough money to hire your own lawyer is slim to none. It occasionally happens, and I've done a few on a retained basis, but it's rare.
We need to take a break on Topical Currents. We're talking about the death penalty, an argument against it, with Richard Jaffe. He's a criminal defense lawyer and a senior partner at Jaffe and Drennan. And also with us is Mark Elliott, executive director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Stay with us.
And we're back 20 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents, Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman. And we're joined by Mark Elliott. He's the executive director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, based in Tampa, and also criminal defense and death penalty attorney Richard Jaffe. He's also the author of a book called Quest for Justice, Defending the Damned. And we'll have a link to that book on the Topical Currents Facebook page and our website, and also a link for the Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Mark Elliott, we have a Florida execution scheduled January 15th in Rateford. Give us the particulars of that case.
It's a case where Shane Cormandy participated in a robbery. It was a home invasion, and it was a murder that took place, and one of the people that was involved in that said that he was the shooter, because it was someone that was killed. And as happens frequently, there's really no way to know who pulled the trigger, but in Florida, anyone that participates in a felony that ends in a murder is eligible for the death penalty. But there's people that have come forward and testimony heard that he never was involved in the actual murder itself. And we have protests and vigils throughout the state, sponsored by many different organizations. We had 24 for the last execution, and they were from Key West to Pensacola and all points in between. So people are standing up and standing out and speaking up and speaking out for a better way forward.
We want to now introduce Herman Lindsay. He was a former death row inmate. He spent 3 years on death row. He was exonerated in 2009. Herman, we're very glad to have you on Topical Currents. Thanks for joining us.
How are you doing?
How are you?
Can you turn your radio down, Herman?
I'm walking away from it.
Okay,
there you go.
Just to reiterate, you were for 3 years on Florida's death row. Why were you there? What were you accused of?
I was accused of first-degree murder and first-degree robbery. I was charged with first-degree premeditated murder and first-degree felony murder.
In July of 2009, Florida Supreme Court ruled unanimously to acquit you and release you. And why did that happen? What turned everything around?
Well, actually, in my case, there was never any fingerprints, eyewitnesses, no type of evidence to place me at the scene. There was no type of evidence recovered from me to say I was involved in anything. What they had was a guy that was once upon a time at the beginning of the investigation, the main suspect on the case. He just got in some other unrelated charges, and he was trying to do a plea bargain. So he fabricated a story and said that I was in a jail cell with him, and I told him that I had to kill someone, that I killed this person at the pawn shop. And after 12 years of investigation, the Fort Lauderdale Police Department decided to go ahead and go get a grand jury indictment and try to indict me based on what he's saying.
What is life like for you now in these past, since 2009?
Actually, life for me right now is very difficult. And one of the reasons it's very difficult is because with that murder charge on my record, I will always be serving like a life sentence, because it always affects me when it's time to get a job. It always affects when I'm trying to find a place to stay, because you have to do background checks and stuff like that. Up until a month ago, it was actually still showing that I was guilty of murder on the background. But after filing some court documents, the clerk's office cleared that up. But life is very difficult. But actually, it's a joyful life for me because, you know, I work with some great people like Mark and some other organizations, and we get to educate people. And, you know, we have a small turnout, but it'd be a big bang in the fight we'd be trying to fight against to stop the death penalty.
Richard Jaffe, are those feelings typical of people who are exonerated?
They are. There are studies, and Herman's exactly right, and it's consistent with my clients. They can't get work. It follows them everywhere. It's on their background. It can never be erased that they were arrested. People still believe they were guilty. So exonerees that are innocent, such as Herman, have a very, very difficult time. The saddest thing about his case, as I listen to it, are two things. One, snitch testimony, which is what caused him to be in this mess in the first place, jailhouse snitch, that's the worst form of testimony. It ought to be banned, but it's not. And the other sad thing is that a grand jury will do whatever, you know, the prosecutor wants. And when a prosecutor gets pressure from a victim's family and they've got something so unreliable, clearly unreliable as a snitch testimony and no fingerprints or other scientific proof, and they indict anyway, that's a sad reflection on our system, and it doesn't do the victims any favors nor anyone else, and the real killer's out there still.
Can you explain this? When somebody's exonerated, why wouldn't their record be expunged or cleared, or why is it still on there? I don't understand that.
Great question. And the answer is because there's no legal mechanism for an exoneration, at least in Alabama, and I don't know of any, where you can get it expunged. Now, Alabama just passed a law where you can expunge a misdemeanor, but you really just can't expunge an arrest at this point. So it's always there. And then when people see that it was an acquittal, they or exoneration, they simply say, "Oh, we probably got off on a technicality," because that's the prejudice that people have when in those circumstances.
We have a caller on the line that we'll want to listen to. He is the prosecutor in the Herman Lindsay case. His name is Dave.
Frankel.
Okay, welcome, Dave.
I can't seem to get him up.
I think he was just there.
Well, it's still, we're having a little technical difficulties. Please bear with us. Richard, I'm unable to punch him up.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, and
we'll work on that, but we'll continue on.
Okay, we'll continue on. I wanted to ask you, Herman, you talked about life being difficult for you now and that you can't get a job, but that it's also joyous. Can you describe the 3 years on death row?
My years on death row was kind of difficult. It was a mental battle. But, you know, I made it through it with the help of my attorney, who encouraged me all the time that you will be back. And as much as I like to say, you know, in my case, and I was just talking to Mark with this a couple of months about Dave Frankel. Dave Frankel was an extraordinary state attorney. He actually didn't really wanted to prosecute the case. He turned around, and when I was leaving out of the courtroom, he also encouraged me that I will be back.
Really?
So, yes.
We're trying to get him up on the phone.
Yeah, we're having some technical difficulties, but we're going to call out to Mr. Frankel and get him on if possible.
Okay. All right. So we'll be able to hear from him. Why don't we get that straightened out? Should we take... Oh, we don't have to take a break.
No, we don't have to take a break.
Go ahead.
Tell me, Richard Jaffe, does the increasing number of exonerations make more and more Americans uncomfortable with these executions?
Absolutely. In the even though in Florida and Alabama and a few other southern states, executions are increasing, like Mark said, the fact is nationally, executions and death sentences are down dramatically, more now than ever. And there are between 140 and 150 people nationally that have been exonerated, such as Herman. And it is true that many people now are questioning the death penalty, the cost. In California, the proposition almost 34, I think it was, almost passed. And yeah, I mean, the sentiment's changing, the poll numbers are changing, and it's no longer overwhelmingly support for it. It's getting more evenly divided.
Mark Elliott, what successes have you seen? And do you agree that people are getting more comfortable? Do you agree with Richard Jaffe?
Absolutely. And I'd like to add to that that there's a growing consensus among the states to absolutely end the use of the death penalty. There were six states.
Could you speak up a little bit, Mark?
Yes. There's a growing consensus in the United States among the states. Six states in the last 7 years have repealed the death penalty, and that makes a total of 18 that have either repealed the death penalty or have never used it. And for the first time, there's a majority of states that have ended the use of the death penalty. If you add the eight death penalty states that have not used the death penalty, either in death sentences or executions, in the last 10 years. So for the first time, we have a majority of states that do not use the death penalty. And Florida's just taking a totally different direction. Mm. States like Texas, executions are the lowest they've been in 10 years. Death sentences are 25% of what they were just a few years ago. But those numbers have increased dramatically in Florida. And it's just, it goes against the trend. And it just makes no sense. You know, Floridians... Us taxpayers, spend an estimated $1 million a week over and above the cost of sentencing people to life without parole just to have the death penalty. And even with that huge expense and all the time it takes and the drawn-out processes, we still make more mistakes than any other state. 25 exonerations out of 89 executions. That's nearly one exoneration for every three executions, which should not be tolerated by anyone.
Richard Jaffe, let's look at the other side of things. Has widespread adoption of lethal injection made some less concerned about cruel punishment of capital punishment, where they don't think that people are being burned and things?
But look,
yes, that is a perception. I'm sorry. That is a perception. On the other hand, recently, including in Florida, but I think Florida, but recently there have been botched executions with lethal injection. People have been suffering for hours. Now, a lot of people say, well, so what? They inflicted suffering on victims, and they should suffer too. But, you know, my view is it the way we administer justice tells more about us than it does about the people we're executing, and that the humane thing to do and the least expensive thing to do is to house these people where they can never get out, and that's a sufficient punishment to live in a room where your bathtub is your bedroom, and it's concrete and steel, and it's 8x10, and it's cheaper.
We had some trouble before, some technical difficulties, but we do have now. I'm still not able to get this up, Richard. We're having some trouble here.
Richard, we'll wait till we get him up. You say that criminal defense attorneys are largely misunderstood. In what ways?
Well, first of all, the public, when you look at movies, I recently saw one, Lincoln Lawyer, but one more recent than that. People think that criminal defense lawyers will do anything to get someone off, and that are no better than their clients. And it's always been that way, when really criminal defense lawyers, as a rule, often are adhere to the highest standards of ethics because they're watched. And I think it's really important that the public...
Just a minute, Mr. Frankel. Sure. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. The public has to understand, and I think Mr. Frankel, if he's on the phone, understands that the system is not a system without both the prosecutor and a defender.
Okay, we do have
Dave Frankel on. He was the prosecutor in the Herman Lindsay case. What would you like to say, Mr. Frankel?
Well, first of all, I was coming home for lunch and a nap, and I happened to hit the radio, and I heard the name Herman Lindsay, and now I'm probably not going to get my nap. But I was the prosecutor on Herman Lindsay's case, and I can certainly speak eloquently about the death penalty. I was a homicide prosecutor for a long time. But I am now in private practice. I am a criminal defense attorney. I handle capital cases from this side as well. I also handle civil rights, meaning I sue police and their departments for the things that they do wrong. And I would like to say that if you, and I appreciate and I like, I'm happy to hear Herman's kind words, but if you're using Herman as your poster child for this, you've got the wrong guy. Herman and another man by the name of Ronnie LeRae went into a pawn shop and sat the middle-aged woman down in a chair, and because she had seen their face, put a gun to her head and pulled the trigger. She had a hole blown out of the front of her head. The reason Herman was convicted was not because of the testimony. It was a testimony of a snitch. After the incident, Herman and Mr. LeRae went back to the neighborhood and bragged about what they had done. His ex-wife, or his wife at the time, saw them bringing things into the house that matched items taken from the safe in the pawn shop, and ultimately it was a 14-year-old case, and the detective, a cold case detective, called Herman Lindsay, or actually let me say this, monitored Herman Lindsay's phone calls and called his mother and said that they were reinvestigating the case, and then simply recorded the phone calls that Herman may had with his mother regarding that. If nobody talks, I don't get in trouble for that. That may have been a little bit ambiguous for the Supreme Court. And I'll tell you why Herman Lindsay ultimately was exonerated was one of the problems in prosecution. And again, I'm not a prosecutor anymore, is that we, in Florida, we handle the case at a trial level. And then we ship the case off to the Attorney General's office, who handles it on appeals. I had the unfortunate of being able to watch the oral argument being Skyped online, and there was a complete breakdown in communication from the trial level to the appellate level, And they weren't even pronouncing anybody's name right. They just did not understand.
Mr. Frankel, of course, we can't dispute with what you're saying. However, I need to add that Mr. Lindsay was exonerated by a unanimous ruling of the Florida Supreme Court.
Oh, I'm 100% with you. But listen, let's not talk about him being wrongfully convicted at trial.
Can I ask a question?
This. Wait. There's a difference between being exonerated and being innocent. So let's leave it at that.
Mark Elliott, you wanted to say something?
Well, no, that was Herman Lindsay, was Mark, I believe, I that wanted to say something. Who wanted to?
Hi, Herman. This is Herman. I'm not trying to debate what you're saying or whatever, because people can look on the record and see what they want to see is plain there. But I have a question. If you felt that way, why did you offer me 3 years for a murder that you claim is so horrendous?
Honestly, I don't remember offering you three years.
Why did you tell me that you guaranteed that I will be back for a new trial? Why did you tell me that you talked to Michael Schultz, your boss, and tell them that this trial need to be retried because this should not go to the Florida Supreme Court?
Herman, I don't remember ever saying anything like that to you. Not at all. But I will say this, that the reason Herman Lindsay can't find a job is he's had a number of felony charges since, and he's got one pending now. I'm looking at the clerk's computer, sitting at my computer. I can give you the case numbers and the dispositions involving violence, involving cruelty to animals, involving drugs. So it's not a bad message, and I don't believe in the death penalty. But Herman ain't the guy to be your poster child.
Well, no one is making him a poster child on it. Herman, would you like to respond to what Mr. Frankel just said?
Actually, no, because I'm not even here to debate all of that.
I understand, you know, that.
Because I feel like this here, the system, they don't have no type of supervision over them where they are accountable for anything. I mean, everything is public record. I don't have anything. And in fact, those charges, I feel this is like harassment, because each one of them, each year I've been home, I've been arrested, and the charges dropped.
Well,
we're getting away from the premise of our program, and we certainly want to thank you, Mr. Frankel.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me give you just some food for thought, and then I'm going to go
briefly.
Yes, I certainly do agree. I don't believe in a death penalty, and I don't even get to the moral issue. It's really a financial issue. These prosecutions and defenses are extremely expensive as opposed to even a regular murder case where the death penalty isn't on the table.
Right.
But even that, the millions that are being spent are in post-conviction relief. People who question, you know, why did it take so long for somebody to actually be put to death? And that's because at taxpayer expense, there are attorneys who spend all of their time going through the record looking for anything that went wrong. It costs about, from what I heard, about $17,000 a year to warehouse somebody in prison, as opposed to about...
But you have no moral problems with it, even though there have been 25 men in Florida exonerated.
I don't even get to the moral issue.
Oh. You know, well, you just said...
Because I don't need to. It's not even worth discussing, because for me, it's just not worth having. As far as the moral issue, let me say this to you. I would hope that if somebody in my family was brutally murdered, I wouldn't need the death penalty to be able to get on with my life. The only thing is, I haven't had anybody in my family.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you,
Mr.
All right,
thank you all. Bye, Herman. Bye bye.
Oh, okay. Well, let's continue. You know, he was talking about the trial and then the appellate. Richard Jaffe, you also add that we have a lot of misconceptions about trial law, and that was pretty confusing what he was saying about Herman's trial. Could you explain a little about that?
Yeah, I mean, basically what I heard, and he's right, it cost about $17,000. He's correct, and it is. He agrees with me and the science that it's so expensive. But when he said it cost millions, it's actually hundreds of millions. Okay. Over the country, but basically what he was saying is that he was disenchanted with the way that the appellate division for the Attorney General's office argued the case before the Supreme Court, and that he didn't dispute Herman Herman's position, which was I didn't have any physical evidence or any real evidence other than some vague phone call, which makes sense because Herman may have known that there was a jailhouse snitch, and that could be what he was referring to. But it's pretty simple, and he knows that most of these cases come back because there's inefficient funding for defense lawyers, and poor lawyers end up handling the majority of these cases. The real successful lawyers in this country, they won't take a death penalty case. It shuts down law offices. So he knows that it's a weak case, and that's basically what he was saying.
Herman, is this difficult for you, this radio program?
Oh, actually, it's not difficult for me because it's, you know, I have mixed feelings with the system because the same justice system that did me wrong is the same justice system that freed me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I look at it that I'm blessed, you know, and it's always going to be disputes about it. And as he was saying before, it's just like when you go out and get a job, some people going to feel you really did it and you got away. You know, I mean, but my thing is I don't argue about any of that before the simple fact it's all on public record. And they can look at things and judge their own. But my main goal is to try to prevent this, what happened to me, happening to others. So I go out and I speak, and I go out and I talk. Yes, maybe I'm not an angel, but one thing we got to look at is the fact that I was wrongfully convicted. And my goal is to try to prevent this from happening before. And as I say, there's no one that... The state attorneys, the judges, the legislators, or anyone responsible for what they do wrong. But they empower them to, when they get elected and stuff, to make these laws to be hard on crime and things like that. But who's hard on them? So I really don't have any argument.
What Bonnie asked earlier about the confusing thing, what strikes me as extraordinary is that the unanimous Supreme Court of Florida not only overturned the case,
right,
but also exonerated him without even making him go through another trial. That speaks volumes. That's extraordinary.
And that means they reviewed everything on the record.
Yeah, it's extraordinary because basically what they were saying in their ruling is that there's not enough evidence to try him.
Like a prime example of what I say, no one to hold him accountable. You know, Dave Franco feel what he feel, and he's okay to feel what he feel. But he can remember the case and things like that, but he can't remember that he actually offered me 3 years for a murder that, you know, you say it's horrendous, that deserved the death penalty. Had I would have took the 3 years, I wouldn't be on the radio station now, but I maintain my innocence. A person that is guilty would have took those 3 years, but he's saying he don't remember any of that.
Mm-hmm.
But he did say that he's thankful for the graceful words, which I mentioned that he also encouraged me that I would be back on appeal. So, you know, the justice system, as I say, and Mr. Franco is not a bad guy. I can tell you that from experience with him. And there's a lot of prosecutors that's not really a bad guy, and they have to do their job. Some feel a certain way, some don't. But the problem of it is we focus on those, but what we need to focus on, too, is you got to look at it. The jury is the one that actually found me guilty. Jury is the one that actually recommended the death penalty. So basically it comes down, as you say, you don't have a lawyer that can argue great. It comes down to the best story. Mr. Franklin won with the best story. My attorney, who's now a judge, Chris Poe now, you know, he did a great job arguing. But the other attorney was the one that argued in trial. You know, he wasn't so good. Hmm. But the thing of it is we have to look at it. The justice system has too many errors in it to even try to take someone else's life as if they are God themselves.
It's topical currents. And we appreciate Mark. We just are going to take a short break. When we come back, we will hear from Mark Elliott. We were listening to Herman Lindsay. He's an exonerated Florida death row inmate, was. And Richard Jaffe is a criminal defense attorney. We'll be right back.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, with former death row inmate Herman Lindsay, also defense and death penalty attorney Richard Jaffe and author, and also Mark Elliott. He's the executive director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. Mark Elliott, as we were leaving for break, you wanted to add something. Go ahead.
I just wanted to point out that, you know, there's been 150 exonerations nationally. Almost 20 were due to DNA evidence that clearly absolved the condemned person of the crime. And in virtually every case, the prosecutors will insist that the person's guilty and they had it right, you know, for whatever reason. You know, the interest is in preserving convictions tends to be the most important duty after there is a conviction, and it's just normal and customary that this will be disputed by the original prosecutor. It happens in almost every case. I'd like to point out, too, it was mentioned about if you had a loved one murdered, how you would feel, that many people that work to end the death penalty, particularly in our organization, and me personally, have lost loved ones to murder. And there's organizations, Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation, that their marching orders are to end the death penalty, that there's better ways to serve the needs of victims' families. You know, we spend that $50-something million dollars a year, which is a conservative estimate in Florida, on the death penalty, and yet crime prevention programs have been disbanded. We've got over 14,000 unsolved homicides in Florida and really no permanently funded cold case squads. It's typically people coming in on off-duty hours to work on a case or two, or, you know, retired police officers. They're trying to do their best, but we just don't fund that. And there's just better ways to protect the public than killing a few prisoners when we have the only alternative today is to keep someone in prison until they die in prison, which is, you know, for many, is the worst punishment.
Richard Jaffe, do you believe the death penalty will be abolished?
I do. It's probably about 5 years off. I predict that in my book, Quest for Justice. And it's going to take something huge. Finance is a big part of it. All the scientific studies show that it doesn't deter crime, so no one really seriously makes that argument. But it's gonna have to be something pretty big when it's even more than a DNA analysis, such as an exhumation of a body where someone's been executed, where it's obvious that someone innocent's been executed rather than clear. It would be obvious. But yes, eventually, because of education and because of DNA and because of cost, it'll be abolished. We're the only Western civilization that utilizes the death penalty.
Why is that?
Because other countries, I limit that to Western civilizations, mm-hmm. but other countries realize that it's inhumane and it doesn't work.
Tell me, Herman Lindsay, something that ran through my mind during your exchange with Mr. Frankel is that if you had been given a life sentence and hadn't taken any kind of plea bargain, your case would probably have never been, you would never have been exonerated, but by being on death row, it was.
I don't feel that way.
No?
No, there's plenty of cases, more cases, and as the Florida Supreme Court said that, you know, suspicious activity is not enough grounds for a conviction. And in my case, you know, that's what Mr. Frankel made it to be, as
but,
is.
But would your case have been revisited if you hadn't been on death row, but instead were serving a life sentence?
I think so.
You do?
Okay. I think I would have been exonerated.
Richard Jaffe or Mark Elliott, there are a disproportionate number of non-Caucasian and mentally debilitated people on death row. Can you talk about those numbers, either of you?
I'll just one sure. thing I would like to say to that is of the 25 people exonerated off death row in Florida, 80% were people of color. I mean, that's where the mistakes usually happen. There are people that can't afford it. I think 95% of the people on death row in Florida, and it's typical of other states, could not afford a lawyer at the time of their arrest.
Right.
That's the thing you have in common.
And Richard, did you want to add something?
Would you repeat your question, Bonnie? I apologize.
No, I was asking about the disproportionate number of non-Caucasian and mentally debilitated
yes.
people on death row, if you had those
statistics. Yeah, I apologize. You know, let me say this. People underestimate the power of race, even in the charging decision. This is a statistic that I think is most important, and that's this. If you're a black person accused of and convicted of killing a white person, as opposed to the reverse, there's a 80% chance. There's actually five times more of a chance you're going to be convicted than the reverse, meaning that race is significant from the charging decision to the grand jury indictment all the way through trial, that race is a powerful influence. And in the United States Supreme Court recognized that in a case called McCleskey versus Georgia years ago, but said that's just the way it has to be.
Hmm.
Talk about a little bit that those who support the capital punishment has lowered from 80% in 1994 mm-hmm. to 60%.
That's right.
Now.
Yes, it has, and I did mention that earlier, and mm-hmm. I think it's because of all the reasons that we have all discussed here in this particular call, including the former prosecutor's acknowledgement that the cost is just astronomical.
Right.
But also the DNA exonerations is huge as well. But let me just say this, if I could. The fact that someone would be offered 3 years and which wouldn't even do the 3 years, turns it down, speaks volumes as to, one, the weakness of the case against him, and also that his belief that he would be willing to face death rather than do a few months in jail, it's extraordinary.
This is Mark Elliott. If I could do a quick bullet point follow-up on the question about race, because it can get a little complex. I know a warden in Florida who conducted executions that resigned when he found out that never in the history of Florida, back in territorial times, records have been kept, has a white person been executed for killing an African American, and that's true today. It has never happened out of hundreds of executions, and he said when he found that out, it was like getting hit with a telephone pole, and he resigned. He realized the process that he was involved in and what it really was. It's his words.
Well, we want to thank you all for being with us today.
Indeed.
Herman Lindsay, very good to talk to you, and we wish you luck. Herman Lindsay is an exonerated former Florida death row inmate. Mark Elliott is executive director of Floridians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. The website is F like Frank, A D like dog, P like Paul.org, FADP.org. We'll have a link to that on our website. And Richard Jaffe is a criminal defense and death penalty attorney and the senior partner at the law firm of Jaffe and Drennan. He's written Quest for Justice, Defending the Damned, and we'll have links to his book and him on our website. Thank you all very much.
Thank you all, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thanks for tuning in. Our producer is Richard Ive, technical direction by online producer Paul Leary. If you didn't hear our entire program and wish to, you can download free audio from our website, WLRN.org, and more information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. If you're a South Florida restaurant aficionado, you'll want to tune in for tomorrow's program. We'll join Linda Gassenheimer, wine columnist Fred Tasker, and restaurant critics for Linda's Restaurant Roundabout. Get the inside scoop on eatery openings, closings, and chefs, and feel free to call in with your recommendations. Diners, veggie cuisine, steakhouses, outdoor cafes, sushi, barbecue. This is Joseph Cooper with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now from NPR News.